Exodus chapter 34. The Lord said to Moses, "Cut two stone tables like the first ones," because Moses had come down from the Mount Sinai and he'd found the people worshipping the golden calf, and so he'd smashed the tables, because the tables were the tables of the covenant, and Moses realized that the people weren't really wanting a covenant relationship, and so he broke this covenant with God and Israel. But then he persuades God to forgive the people, and they try to move on together. So God says to him, "I will write on these new tables the words that were on the first tables, which you broke."
Why? But,
well, because God wanted to give them another chance, when really they hadn't really been very repentant, and really it was Moses who had begged God to try to continue with them. "By tomorrow morning, prepare yourselves and come up Mount Sinai to meet me there at the top. But nobody is to come up with you. Nobody is to come onto any part of the mountain. No animals, sheep or cattle are to come to feed at the foot of the mountain." So Moses cut two more stone tables, and very early in the morning he carried them up to Mount Sinai, just as the Lord had commanded. And Yahweh came down in the cloud and stood with him there, and declared his name, Yahweh. Yahweh then passed in front of him and called out, "I, Yahweh, am a God full of compassion and pity, who is not easily angered, showing great love and faithfulness, keeping my promises to thousands of generations, forgiving sin and transgression, and yet certainly punishing to the second, third, and fourth generation of those who sin against me." Moses quickly bowed down to the ground and worshipped, saying, "Lord, if truly I have found grace in your eyes, please go with us. The people are very rebellious, but forgive our sin and transgression and accept us as your very own people." So the declaration of God's name, although he does say Yahweh, he declares his name, it's really the declaration of his character, because in Hebrew, a name carries with it the idea of a character. And so this is the essence of who God is. So to hear the name declared doesn't just mean shouting out Yahweh or whatever. That's not the point. And quite how you pronounce the name of God, whether it's Jehovah or Yahweh or Yehovah or whatever, doesn't really matter. The point is that God is who he is by his characteristics. And the first one of them is, "I, Yahweh, am a God full of compassion and pity." So then God wants to save us, and he feels very sorry for us because we're so spiritually weak. And this is a comfort that you come back to time and again when you fall into sin, when you realize that you haven't lived as you should, you haven't spent your life as you should.
And you feel like you're really bad.
That's right, when you feel really bad about yourself, then you can remind yourself that God, our God, is a God full of compassion and pity. The Lord said to Moses, "I now make a covenant, an agreement, a set of promises with the people of Israel. Before them I will do great things, such as have never been done on earth amongst any of the nations. All the people will see what great things I, Yahweh, will do, because I am going to do a terrible and awesome thing with you. But obey the laws that I give you today. I will drive out the Amorites, Canaanites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and the Jebusites as you advance into the land. Do not make any covenant, any agreement with the peoples of the land into which you're going. This will become a snare to you. You are to tear down their altars, destroy their holy pillars, cut down the Asherah, that is, these trees that they planted to worship idols with. Do not worship any other god, because I, Yahweh, have no equal. Do not make any covenants with the people of the land, because when they worship their gods and sacrifice to them, they're going to ask you to join in with them, and you'll be tempted to eat the sacrifices which they offer to their gods. And your sons will marry those foreign women, and they will lead them to worship their pagan gods." So, you see, God is, in a sense, a jealous God, in a sense, a demanding God, but that's because he loves us so much. And it's quite understandable, therefore, that he wants us to be faithful and loyal to him and not go off with other gods. As we keep saying, these other gods are all around us. We're tempted all the time to worship things that are not God, that are alternatives to the one true God. All the time, this is our temptation to commit idolatry. And it may be in being obsessed with saving money to buy something for our own pleasure. It can be all sorts of things, keeping on playing a certain game, when really the one big thing in our life, in the end, has got to be God. Do not make and worship other gods. Keep the feast of unleavened bread, that's what came after the Passover, as I commanded you. You are to eat unleavened bread, bread without yeast, for 7 days in the month of Abib. In that month it was that you were brought out of Egypt. Every firstborn son and every firstborn animal, that is, a male animal, is to be devoted to me. But you are to redeem every firstborn donkey by offering a lamb in its place. If you don't redeem it, you are to break its neck. You are to redeem every firstborn son. No one is to appear before me empty, that is, empty-handed. When we come before God, we have got to offer something. Now, that doesn't mean you've got to give money. It doesn't mean anything material. But all the same, there must be this acceptance that we are to sacrifice. As we said when we were looking at the structure of the tabernacle, the first requirement was that you bowed your head so that you could fit through the gate. It was humility. And after that was the altar, the principle of sacrifice. And after that, there was the big laver where you washed, representing baptism. So humility first. And then this acceptance that we are here to offer, we are here to give to God. Of course, you're only giving back to God that which he has given you. You have 6 days in which you are to work, but on the seventh day you shall not work, even during time of ploughing and harvest. That is, when it was absolutely critical to get all the work done as much as you could, it would have seemed stupid when the harvest might spoil, because the rain might come and destroy it, or the grapes might get overripe, to suddenly stop for one day. But this was a test of their faith, that if you honour God, somehow everything turns out all right. And this is the great challenge to faith, that if you honour God and do what other people might think is absolutely stupid, you will find that God in the end will make everything work out all right for you in material terms. It doesn't mean you'll be wealthy and whatever, but it does mean that God will look after you. Keep the celebration of harvest when you begin to harvest the first fruits of your wheat, and keep the festival of booths, or tabernacles, when you have gathered in your fruits. 3 times a year, all your males must appear before the Lord, the God of Israel. After I have driven out the nations before you and enlarged your territory, nobody is going to try and attack you during the time of the 3 feasts. So, again, they were asked to do that which appeared not to be very wise. For all their men to go away from the towns and villages and go up to the sanctuary, maybe in Jerusalem, every year, 3 times a year. Might think, now some of us have got to stay behind. Enemies might come and attack us while we're gone. And God says, no, don't do that. I will preserve you if you put me first. Now, when I was young, in 1973, there was what was called the Yom Kippur War, which was the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And the Arabs attacked Israel on the Day of Atonement, and it became known as the Yom Kippur War, because the Israelis had to desperately get all their men together and go and fight. And I think that that indicates that Israel today are not, in fact, blessed by God, and are not, in fact, covered by him, because they have not accepted Jesus Christ. That would never have happened if they were obedient to the covenant and had this blessing that is promised here. So God is not backing Israel against the Arabs, and in fact the Arabs are going to win for a short time. Israel is going to fall. Jerusalem will fall, finally, according to the Bible prophecies. But then Jesus will come back and resolve all these problems. You are not to offer bread that's made with yeast when you sacrifice animals to me. Do not keep until the following morning any of the animal parts that you killed at the Passover. Every year you are to bring to the sanctuary of the Lord the first fruits of the corn that you harvest. So again, it's the first and the best. Do not cook a young sheep or goat in its mother's milk. And I think that that was a sort of a tradition that was around at the time. And I think the simple reason for it, apart from the fact it might have been connected with idolatry, I think the simple reason was that God didn't want the poor sheep or goat to see its little one being cooked in its own milk. So God is very sensitive to animals. And the law of Moses tries to develop a culture of kindness and a culture of sensitivity to other people. And so the Lord said to Moses, make a copy of these words, because it is on the basis of these words that I make this covenant with you and Israel. Moses was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did not eat nor drink anything. And he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Now you notice that the Ten Commandments include the Sabbath, and they were written on the tables of stone, and they're called the words of the covenant. And yet Paul says that the old covenant, which was written on tables of stone, has been taken away, and that includes the Sabbath. Although the essence of the other nine commandments is repeated in the New Testament. When Moses returned from Mount Sinai carrying the Ten Commandments, his face shone because he had been speaking with Yahweh. But at the time, he didn't know that. Aaron and all the people looked at Moses and realized that his face was shining, and they were frightened to come near him. But Moses called them, and Aaron and the elders of the community came near to him, and Moses spoke to them. After that, all the Israelites gathered around him, and Moses gave them all the laws that Yahweh had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking to them, he covered his face with a veil. Whenever Moses went into the tent of meeting to speak to Yahweh, he took off the veil. When he came out, he would tell the people of Israel all that he had been told to say, and they would see that his face was glowing. And then he'd put the veil back on until the next time that he went to speak to the Lord. Now, Paul says that we each, with unveiled face, like Moses, have seen the glory of the Lord. And he means that we have seen the glory of God, as he says, in the face of Jesus Christ. And what that means is that he's saying that we are no less than Moses. For the Israelites, Moses was the absolute greatest person there was, and we can never be similar to Moses. And Paul is saying, no, you're all the same. All of us who are in Christ have seen the glory of God. And if we look upon the character and the personality of Jesus, then bit by bit, as he says in that same passage in 2 Corinthians 3, we will be transformed into the same glory, bit by bit, because that glory, that wonderful character, will shine off our face as well.